Welcome to another episode of Policy Talks. Today we have Mr. B.G. Mahesh, who's a veteran entrepreneur, you know, from the dot-com era onwards. Now, of course, he's more involved and engaged with the DPI ecosystems, and runs is the co-founder and the CEO of Sehmati, which is an account aggregator ecosystem. And as part of our series of podcast into DPIs, we have him here with us to talk about how does the account aggregator ecosystem work, what impact does it have. So welcome to this podcast, Mahesh. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Yatish. Thank you for actually calling Sehmati. I'm very happy to share my thoughts on this. DPI, which we strongly believe will have a huge impact in India.
So, Mahesh, to begin with, give us a little context and background about the account aggregators.
Sure. So this account aggregator framework is, it is, from the four regulators, and it was published by the Reserve Bank of India in the year 2016. When I say, it is the framework, etc. It came in 2016. And technical specs of this framework actually it came in 2019. So what this account aggregator ecosystem or framework rather is about, it allows the customer, whether it is individual or a small business or a corporate, they are able to share any kind of their financial data with any other regulated entity. So currently, when you go and apply for a loan or you go to your financial planner, the only way you are able to share your information is either you give them a hard copy of your financial data, or for the past 10, 15 years, you're able to send an email, of your, the statements, which is the bank statements, which will be password protected. And we need to also understand not everybody in India is all that comfortable, to use internet banking, to email the statement, etc.
Yeah. So not everybody has their own financial data in their hands. So they are not financially, they may be financially independent, but they are data dependent on the ecosystem.
So as you can see, in this whole process for the customer, it is painful, this entire process, of sharing the data. And for the financial institution, there is a lot of friction in receiving the data. And then it has to be scanned, processed, OCR, and all those things. And it is not yet tamper-free the way people are getting. Account aggregator actually comes there. Easiest way to explain the account aggregator, the way it works, is how the UPI has removed the friction in making payments. Okay. Similarly, account aggregator has removed the friction in sharing your financial data. In UPI, you are able to make a payment only when the end customer gives the consent on the UPI app. In account aggregator ecosystem, only when the end customer gives the consent on the account aggregator app, the data is shared from your bank or your provider to the the service provider.
So it's interesting you drew an analogy between UPI and account aggregators. Both these entities came around at the same time. 2016 was when UPI started. 2016 is when the permission for account aggregators happened. Where are we in terms of progress of account aggregator in terms of adoption by the financial ecosystem and adoption by the customer, individuals?
So if you see that, even though the actual policy which came into 2016, as I said, only the first set of account aggregator licenses, operating licenses, were given only in 2019. So it is only in 2020, even though it was the pandemic year, by the end of 2020, it actually went live. And by 2022, end of June, all the public sector banks, went live. So now we have like about 300 and odd entities which are on the account aggregator ecosystem. All the 12 public sector banks are on AA. All the top private banks are on AA. Already few insurance companies have come on this. So the amount of data shares which have happened, it has already crossed, approximately, 12 crores. So, 1.2 crores, 12 million. The amount of consents, which have been shared since until yesterday is 13.5 million. So data consents were successfully delivered. And the number of accounts which have been linked on AA is approximately 12 million. Accounts have been linked on the account aggregator ecosystem. It is a very good start, but we still have a long way to go. We have to start small and we have to grow, actually in a phased, way, because as the usage increases, as the scaling happens, also we need to ensure that all the technical systems at every hop at the AA, FIP, FIU are scalable and they're able to deliver, what they have to deliver.
So, if you were to look at the adoption rate, it's at around, if you were to look at the whole population, it's at around 1.2-1.5% of the total population. And if you were to look at the bank population, and we take the bank population to somewhere around 250 million Indians, it would be slightly, it's more than what, 5-6%.
5-6%.
Yeah.
But I also want to say that for FY23, which ends in March 2023, the amount of loans which were disbursed using the account aggregator ecosystem was about 6,500 crores. Okay, by the NBFCs and the banks who used AA to give out the loans.
So these would be loans to corporate entities, or these are loans to individual entities?
I think I should have also said, of that 6,500, more than 50% were for small businesses.
So that is very important. So, because the initial hypothesis behind creating account aggregators was that it would help small businesses procure loans in an environment where they were not able to do so earlier, because of lack of financial information or because of lack of credit history per se. So because I didn't have a loan earlier, I wouldn't get a loan, loan from a bank. So that's very heartening to see that, at least 50% of them are SMBs. Now, help us understand a little bit about how does the account aggregator fit into the India stack, and where does what lies below it and what lies above it?
So you have three layers, as mainly in India stack. You have the identity layer, in which you have Aadhaar is there. Okay, then you have the payment layer, and one of the components is obviously the UPI. And the third is the data layer, of which account aggregator is one of the offerings in the data layer. What is important to note, and which is fascinating, is that each of these layers work independently. Okay, it is up to each of these applications. Like if account aggregator, the end use case, not AA directly, If they want to use the UPI, they'll be able to use UPI. And obviously, when you're opening a bank account, you know, they may ask you, you know, for the verification of your, you know, so KYC, etc., you know, where the first layer is used. So each of these are independent. And yeah, the end use case, you know, there is a very high chance they will, you know, speak to each of the layers, okay, to deliver the end product. So the more and more they use each of the layers, I would say that higher the chance of the end-to-end journey to be completely digital. If you don't use any one of the layers, you will be able to deliver the end use case. To give an example, I may be able to apply for a loan, get approval using Account Aggregator, and if they don't use UPI to like actually give the loan, you know, either they'll give a check, or use RTGS, etc., you know, to give. So I'm telling, if they wish to use, you have an option to use each of the layers of India stack, but it isn't mandatory.
So, and you know, we've been hearing about certain other DPIs, like at least from the iSpirit network, which combines GST data, income tax data, which currently does not reside with the banking system but resides with the government systems.
Yes.
That being combined into the for a full view of the so-called financial profile of a business or an individual.
Correct.
So we heard of a DPI called Badal. Are you aware of Badal and its integration progress?
Yeah, I mean, the exact status I won't be able to tell you. I mean, I will not be able to tell you about Badal, but you know, you are right that you know, when AA started, it was for any entity which is registered and regulated by any of the four financial service regulators. But now, like about 15 days ago, you would have seen the news that a GST schema also has been published for the account aggregator ecosystem, which means the GSTN will be an FIP. So I, as a small business, when I apply for a loan, I could share my GST invoices, which will give you know, the view, or I mean the okay pipeline view of my business, and the bank statements will actually, you know, show the so status of the collections. So
So
which
this is happening. This will come. The GST data will come via account aggregators.
Yes, I mean, you have a choice. Either the you know, somebody will be able to have it shared, you know, through a GSP or through the account aggregator.
Okay, so and like let's give example of a use case. I'm an SMB owner and I have GST data, but
Correct.
I have no past credit history,
Correct.
but I have so my GST data. I agree to share my GST data.
Yes.
The bank goes to a licensed account aggregator,
Right.
and that account aggregator now has my GST data, my all my banking statements, all my banking data, all my insurance data, all my provident fund data, everything, and now it can technically give me a loan based on my cash flow.
One correction there, that the account aggregator is not having any of your information. Okay, it is exactly like in your UPI app. So, you know, when I have to explain, I always go back to UPI because everybody is very familiar with UPI. Because, you know, when you are about to make a payment using UPI, the UPI app is not having your money. It informs your bank that it should be made the payment. Account aggregator is also the same. When you go and apply for a loan with a bank or NBFC, they are going to ask you for your account aggregator handle. And that bank will actually, you know, go and inform your account aggregator that you have applied for a loan and they want your so GST period for, I mean, information for a particular period, maybe 1 month or 6 months. And your bank statements are again, say for 4 months. Then the account aggregator, rather the account aggregator with whom you have an account, you have linked your accounts, which is a very important point. Link your accounts, your account aggregator will go to each FIP, like like after you give your consent, rather, that yes, I am okay to share my GST data, I am okay to share my so bank statements from so these two banks which I have linked, then your account aggregator goes to each of the FIPs. It will actually get the data and it will deliver it to the FIU, which is your lending institution. So the account aggregator has no information of yours, and once the account aggregator has passed on all this information to the FIU, it deletes the data. So account aggregator has no information of yours, and even if they had saved, which is against the rules, all the information which they have, it can be decrypted only by the FIU. So what the information which goes through AA is not able to act and like actually decrypt it. Hence, we say the account aggregator is data blind.
Yeah, so that's very important to understand both from a privacy of data point of view and also from where the data actually resides. But it does reside with the lending institution. And suppose I decide not to take that loan,
Yes.
what happened to that data which I have consented to give to the
Yes.
lending institution? Is that also deleted or does that remain
Yes, sure, I'll
like?
explain that to you. So actually, when that FIU, with whom you went and applied for a loan, it asked the account aggregator for information. It actually declares the purpose for which it is asking for your data. And one very, very important field which we have, which is actually called data life. For what period of time it is allowed to process the data. Okay, so when you're applying for a loan, it may be 1 week or 15 days. After that 15 days, that entity is not allowed to use your data. Okay, but if their respective regulator has a requirement that you need to save the data for 6 years, 8 years of every customer who came and applied for a loan, they will have to save the data. The other part which I want to say is only when account aggregator has actually come into the picture, everybody is actually asking, okay, what happens to all my data? Which is a good thing. The people are asking. But until now, also, you're giving them the offline data. You're giving the data with the hard copy and email, but nobody was asking, okay, my loan was not approved, or I am not going with that institution for the loan. What happens to my data? Okay, which nobody was asking. So now, in a way, account aggregator has made actually the people ask, okay, I care about my privacy.
Yeah, it's
Okay.
an interesting evolution in even people concern about the data.
Yeah,
Now,
certainly.
in this whole layers, where does the DPI DEPA plays a role? Is DEPA being used
DEPA
extensively?
is actually a framework on how data it will be shared, that it should be consented. Okay, and if you use the MITRE's consent artifact, which says that you'll have a purpose code, you'll have the data life, and if it is a one-time consent, if it is a recurring consent. So all these principles are actually explained in like actually in DEPA, which says that you can share any kind of data, but it should be consented. Account aggregator is only an instantiation of the DEPA framework. It is the financial either you can say financial instantiation or a fork of of that framework, but it is only for the financial data.
So if you were to look at it visually, we have the stack,
Yeah.
which are the three layers, so to say.
Yeah.
You have the
But
identity layer
authentic
at the
payments.
bottom. You have the banking Jandhan account layer at the center, and then you have the payment layer on top. And then you have so-called the Aadhaar, the account aggregator, which is through the DEPA layer interacting with financial institutions at one end and with the individuals. What protocol are they using to interact with the individuals? Is there a specific protocol that they're using to, suppose I'm
working
with the...
Yeah. Currently, I mean, no, the way it is using the public internet HTTPS to interact with each of the institutions.
It's not using Beacon protocol to interact.
The Beacon is for something else. See, this is for data sharing only. Okay, Beacon is like, you know, for democratizing commerce. So that's a separate protocol.
Okay. So,
but since you have actually brought it up, it is like each of these UPI, AA, UPI, AA, so Beacon, etc., will be able to work with each other, but they are not dependent upon each other.
Correct. That's very important to know, especially for the technical minded and also for people who are thinking about these frameworks. Now, let's take this to a slightly tangential this thing. Account aggregator is using the DEPA framework basically to understand what consent the individual has given. And it is sharing the data with the FIO, which is the lending institution. The full form of FIO is financial...
information user.
Financial information user, which would be a lending institution. Or
yes.
Maybe an institution.
Financial planner, it can be insurance, AMC,
okay.
Anything of those.
So now, DEPA also in a sense, therefore is guaranteeing that whatever consent I have given or whatever rules I have set for sharing my information are followed by an ecosystem.
Yes, you're right.
This is a very important development according to us in this, in the data world. Because the DEPA then, if it is used for financial information, it can also be used for other information.
For like health, for travel, education.
For even for age consent access to internet, you know, like for pornography site insists that, you know, you have to be 18 years and above. A gaming, online gaming site insists that you should be, you know, X years above. Why is DEPA not being enabled, or should I say, its application not being enlarged in other usages on the internet?
Say that it is up to each of the ecosystems to look at it and say, yes, you know, we want to, like, it should be used. See, now, example, you have your foundational, so DPIs. I mean, you have GPS on which you have Google Maps built. You have an SMTP on which, you know, several email clients are there, either Gmail, Thunderbird, or any of those. So now account aggregator, for example, or any of those are the foundational, so DPIs. Now it is up to the ecosystem from each of the fields to pick it up and say it should be used. Okay, so like including, like example, travel. Like if I say that if you want to be able to share, you know, all your trips information, it can be used. If you want to share, you know, your health records, you know, it can be used. So I would say that each of any of the, you know, how to say, like, you know, so Sahamati is for the financial ecosystem. It is being used. So in the same way, I mean, you have Swasth, you know, which is for health. In the same way, if there are other entities which are focused on a particular space, they all should look into DEPA and saying we should implement it.
So that's a voluntary implementation that, you know, you're talking about. Voluntary, as you know, is not a is not an easy thing for most market participants to take.
It's not a startup.
Yeah. So you finally you need some regulatory body to come in, step in, and say that, hey guys, we've given you time for voluntary usage. Now you need to do it through direct of usage.
See, it will come, in my opinion, also because it occurred to me, say that once you have your digital data privacy bill passed, which gives the right to every individual or a business, the capability to share their information data with anybody they want. So an FIP or your data fiduciary, which has your data, is obligated to make it easy for you to be able to share the data, with a consent. So when everybody needs to implement it, instead of reinventing the wheel, they might as well look into if something is already in the market, which has been gone live, if it has been tested, and if it is working well, they can implement the same in a particular vertical.
So let's take an hypothetical case here. There is, the government is very keen to curb online betting, and they feel that online betting has to be curbed both from an age perspective and from a misuse or overuse perspective. Okay. And it has been asking, state governments have banned it. Central government is saying that there needs to be a regulatory body. Is it foreseeable in the near future that a Sahamati kind of an organization or Sahamati itself is applied as a framework on online betting, where it says that consent will be given, your age will be determined by the system, and the amount of money that you can use or misuse on that platform will be governed by either maximum limits, minimum limits, or your bank account.
Maximum especially. Okay. Yeah. Especially yeah. Maximum limit. I mean, I for sure don't foresee myself getting involved in the online betting. Okay. Something, I'm not able to gel with at all. Okay. Frankly, but, I would say that, a use case which you have actually brought up is the age verification. But in this case, also your financial capability or your limit. So based on all your financial bank statements, so somebody is able to determine, or how much of it you are able to spend on a particular thing. But I'm not sure if your constitutional thing will actually step in rights. That who are you to tell me I can spend every day only 100 rupees or not 150 rupees? I mean, I'm not sure about that. I mean, how that works, because for everything, you will have a lawyer who will actually fight for you.
What about time? Attention is a increasingly expensive commodity on internet, and increasingly it is being soaked up by different forms of different platforms. Like, for instance, an OTT platform sucks in, 8% of your time on a daily basis. A gaming platform, say, sucks in 15 to 20% or even 50% in case of a teenager, leads to depression, anxiety, and all those things. And this is also a form of resource. It's a resource and it's a consent. I have given consent for playing, but yes. I've not given consent to the platform to ensnare me into addictive behavior for a 50% of my resources.
Correct.
So, like, for instance, China is not a great example for all democratic accesses, but it has limited time in terms of access for gaming. But it has not done it through technology. It has insisted the market players prevent usage. Okay, we have actually developed technology without developing policy. So our policy, our technology is moving ahead of our policy, but in a right and proper manner, especially for digital public goods.
Yes.
There is nothing to curb attention in today's world. And attention for this generation is possibly the most, precious resource.
Yes.
Do you see Sahamati kind of institution playing a role in terms of governing attention?
We can't govern, I would say. But I mean, we as in sense, for sure not Sahamati. But Sarmati, like an institution, if they set up actually the framework where with the consent of the end customer, they are automatically, they're able to share the amount of time they've spent, when they use on phone, when they use on laptop, OTT, automatically all information is actually going to one place. And from there, you get the warning as a whole, for the whole day, you've already burnt, your entire digital quota. Okay, that you have to take a break. But here the I would say the focus is the consent. Okay, with your thing, everything is shared, number one. But okay, then everybody is also afraid because all your information of each your platform, how it is being used, is stored somewhere. Okay, now how safe is it? Is it accessible only to the algorithm and not the human being who's behind that entity? So all those questions will come, but which is solvable, in my
Which is
opinion, it is solvable.
solvable in a if it is not sitting in a government entity, but it's sitting in a digital public good kind of a infrastructure where
Yes.
the access is not to private institution or to government institution. This is very important, and it is also very important from a and I would say that consent is not given only just by the individual. Consent is given by regulation. That this is the limit imposed, and both the individual and the gaming entities or any other platform have to therefore follow it. How does the government make sure that people are not wasting their time? A young 13-year to 19-year-old minds are not wasting the time on
Yeah.
OTTs and this thing. And this is a concern now world over, but there are no frameworks which have come up. There is a lot of discussion around policy, but nothing around frameworks and technology. You see, there are two ways to implement these things, I believe, in a fast-moving technology world. One is that you develop policy, which is generally with a lag effect of 3 years or 5 years behind the technology. The other is you actually develop technology which keeps pace with the
Yeah,
development.
what's happening? Yeah.
Which is what India has been doing. No, we are moving ahead of technology by developing DPIs which keep pace through APIs and the protocol itself then becomes
Been
policy,
a
so to say.
fantastic last 10 years or so, approximately 8 9 years, India has actually shown.
Yeah, we moved ahead of the curve. We have moved ahead of the
See,
global
I
curve.
would say that if you have any of all these frameworks and the thing, and it is shown as a digital public good, which is good for the society, it will be I think it will be seen actually in a good way. But the moment you add a mandatory thing, right, lens, okay, everybody will start jumping around. Okay, so I think you may I think, like, if the product is actually very, very good, okay, then the parents automatically will obviously show interest, or because after all, everybody is interested in the so well-being of the child. Yeah, but the issue is, anyway, I think to speak about that topic, you need another podcast. We'll be moving away from financial inclusion to family inclusion, so let's not get into that. But
No, financial inclusion to digital well-being. Yeah, and I
yeah,
think
this is, I think it is a very important topic, and I'm sure you will find few entities and actually people who will be okay to get involved. In fact, I would say that the actually the gaming industry itself should actually participate in this.
yeah, I believe so. I believe
Yeah.
so. You're very right that because it's better to lead the change rather than bleed the change, so to say.
Yeah.
But now coming back to Samathi, we are Samathi is not a licensed entity. There
We
are
are a
licensed.
not-for-profit body. We are a
Yeah.
not-for-profit Section 8 who are working on growing the account aggregator ecosystem by working with everybody who is involved indirectly or directly with the ecosystem. So it is the FIPs, account aggregators, FIUs, technology service providers, your policy makers. We work with everybody, okay, with all of them to make it happen. Our interest is to make sure that the end your customers' interests are actually taken care.
So you're representing in the interest of the end consumer or
Yes.
the ecosystem?
No, I mean, we have to work with everybody. I mean, we cannot work only saying that we work only for the end customer, and we start having fights with the ecosystem. We have to work with each other and ensure that it is actually fair for everybody.
So how do you see the so-called adoption improving or changing over the next 5 years? Tell us what are the triggers we should keep in mind, which will tell us that, like, you know, UPI really took off, didn't take off in the first 3-4 years, if you remember.
Yes.
People say demonetization was a great driver for UPI.
No,
but I think the bigger driver was COVID, and there was another driver that when all the payment banks, all the payment entities came on board, you know,
yes,
suddenly the existing marketplace was bigger than the individual platform marketplace, and that became a driver. And I think there was a little nudge at that point in time by both RBI and NPCI that, you know, this is the way to go. There was no mandatory policy, but there were nudges, soft nudges, hard nudges, whatever you might want to call them, which enabled that to happen. How do you see this, you know, scenario kind of replicating itself in the account aggregator world?
See, I think it is very important for everybody to see that, you know, when any new DPI is going to be launched, like account aggregator, or even if you actually take anything else in the commerce space, if you see, you know, ONDC, they all have started the journey now. So it is not possible that within 1 month of something going live, it will scale up, the way everybody wants. You know, everything happens in a very, very phased manner. Now, you know, we have like 300 and odd entities who are on account aggregator ecosystem. So are we happy about it? Yes, we are happy about it. Okay, but, is there any way we can stop our work? Obviously not, because the number of entities who are eligible to be part of AA ecosystem is almost 10,000 entities. Okay, so we still have a long way to go, but we can have excellent growth. We can the scaling also will be strong, and it won't be fragile if the foundation is very strong. So we are in that phase now. We are working with all the large entities, and and everybody else who is on live, I mean, who are technically savvy entities, etc., to ensure the way it is scaling is actually happening in a dependable way, in the sense that, you see, the success rate, the SLAs have to be good. So like now in UPI, when you make a payment, it has to go through. So account aggregator as of now is yet to reach where it should be. So it has started now. It has had, we have seen some teething problems, but the beauty is that every entity is working with us to see how to solve for this teething problem.
Where do you think the tipping point lies?
I think the tipping point lies when all the public sector banks and the private top banks, they successfully integrate the account aggregator pipe into every product of theirs. Okay, currently each one has launched in a couple of things only, products, which in my opinion is the right strategy, because they will want to test it out with a few products, see if it is if something has to be changed, something has to be so fine tuned, and once they have it right, then take it to all their products.
Understood.
So it has to happen with all the large entities, and you would see with all the technically savvy young entities. You have, many NBFCs who are technically savvy. we'll be able to scale this in a very, very big way. So for me personally, I you know, when if you ask me when do I feel that Sarmati has delivered, it is not the number of entities which have gone live on AA. When I come to know if a street vendor or an auto rickshaw driver was able to apply for a loan using the account aggregator framework, you know, without even visiting a branch, it is only then for me it will be that it will be a, you know, a satisfying, you know, in a moment that it has delivered.
So would it be, you know, we're one of the few countries in the world which has an account aggregator framework without having a digital banking license or an open banking license. And there is a school of thought which says that while public sector banks and private sector banks will move at a pace, a digital bank might move, a native digital bank will move at a much faster pace in terms of integrating or in terms of even launching each product with an account aggregator embedded in it, you know. And
Yes.
that adoption will, you know, finally enable a tipping point or so to be reached quicker than it would happen with, you know. So just imagine the UPI without the payment wallets, UPI only with, you know, public sector banks and private sector banks trying to do an RTGS in an internet world, you know.
Yes.
That's where the account aggregators framework currently is, in my humble opinion. But and I see a digital bank, a native digital bank, being the tipping point.
No, but
You,
over
what
here,
is your thing?
see, over here, I would, it actually, it depends upon the financial product, for example. Okay, now if you want to be, taking a loan, etc., the cheapest rate which you actually get is from the largest institution. It is not, you know, from a small institution. So over here, it becomes important that all sizes of institutions, you know, they come on AA, and every product of theirs
Myself,
will be.
I beg to differ there very strongly. We've
Yeah.
done the study and we realized that the cost of capital for a traditional bank, a public sector bank, is the highest. The cost of capital for a private sector bank is lower. The cost of capital for a new bank would be cheapest, not because of the they're able to raise capital at a cheaper rate, because their institutional cost is cheaper. So
Agreed.
If I have a branchless digital bank, my cost is actually lower than, will be lower than all the incumbents from day one, because my cost of operations is lower. Cost of operations of a branch banking is around 18% of the cost of a bank. In a branch NBFC, the cost of branches between 18 to 22%. So
Okay.
somehow this kind of and this is a large, these are large costs which does not arise in a digital bank or a digital native digital finance operations, you know. And RBI is kind of holding back this rein too hard, you know, for whatever reason.
Oh, so
I believe that they might come a bank that time that, you know, differential banking would be more digital banking rather than.
that is the beauty of the account aggregator framework. I would say it makes it, possible for the end customer to easily shop for, you know, for any of the financial products, you know, at the best rate. Okay, sitting at home. Now, the hardest part now in the offline world is you need to either email or need to go to the branch, you know, across and apply. Okay, now you sitting here, I'm able to apply to the traditional banks and the digital entities and see who gives me the best rate.
Yeah, but I'll pose another use case for you. You know, a use case which is which troubles non-profits like us. Do you know no bank in the country gives a non-profit a credit card or a card that can be used? No bank in the give the non-profit a working capital, in spite of knowing the cash flows that are coming in. You know, they can see. Traditionally, the non-profits are actually kept out of the banking system. It's
Okay.
interesting. We are like the street vendors who don't have a predictable cash flow, but we do have a cash flow. But the banking system believes that we are not bankable. And that makes life so difficult for organizations like ours. We hope that somewhere the account aggregators also takes our financial information and makes
It should,
all these
yeah.
banking products
Yeah,
simple.
honestly, it is difficult, but as you said, that at least you are able now to easily, you are able to share your financial data
Yeah.
and see if it works. Yeah, sure. Great.
It's great talking to you, Mahesh.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to talk again. And thank you for your inputs on the account aggregator. We wish you all the luck, and we wish Sahamati the
Thank you
best
very much.
for
We
making
need
this.
all the support and all the good wishes,
We are
by which
certain,
I'm able to help
behind it.
to the large population.
Best of
Thank
luck
you.
on that.
Thank you very much.